Staying securely connected to work.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, this week, we want to talk about what lies ahead. In the previous week, we did talk to some extent about why this third quarter rebound, not a recovery, a rebound is the difference, is going to falter. A lot of talk about, the third quarter, you know, we're going to see a rebound, V-shaped recovery, all that other nonsense. Well, last week we talked about short run, why that's not going to happen. And, you know, we're already seeing it. Yes, already. As of mid-July, that the thing is faltering. I think I saw some figure about the big surge in consumer spending has leveled off. Well, it wasn't such a big surge, you know. Consumer spending in March, April collapsed 35%. Okay, and I think it recovered in May 18 of that, and then another 7. And so it's about a half to two-thirds. But you got to remember that consumer spending surge following the reopening, you know, is because people were getting decent unemployment benefits. We're talking about the $600 a week on top of the state. The $600 a week is a federal supplement on top of the state unemployment. Yeah, they've been spending that. And that's why you had this opening of consumption with the opening of the economy. But that's coming to an end, you see. That's coming to an end in about a week or so. Next week, we're going to see what really happens with the so-called HEROES Act. The U.S. House of Representatives already passed $3 trillion, which is close to what's needed. Four is what's needed, but three is pretty close. Continuing the unemployment benefits, the supplemental, to keep consumption going. But the Republican McConnell Senate, no, they don't want to do that. And they've proposed here, verbally, I heard yesterday, $1 trillion, but I'll bet you most of that's business tax cuts, which will be hoarded. Yeah, so we are on the verge here another week to see if the fiscal stimulus is really a stimulus. You know, because the CARES Act was not a stimulus. It was a mitigation bill, just enough to put something of a floor under even the terrible collapse we had second quarter. You know, the Federal Reserve estimates GDP in the second quarter is going to drop somewhere between 30 and 41%, depending whether you look at the Atlanta Fed or New York Fed forecasts. Never happened before that much. So it was a mitigation bill. It would have been even worse, the CARES Act. Would have been even worse. And as we talked about last week, you know, the CARES Act, they said it was $2.3 trillion. Only about $1 trillion of that has actually gotten into the economy because the loans to medium and large-sized businesses did not get into the economy because they didn't take up the loans because they didn't need the loans because they are all fat with cash for various reasons, as I explained last week. Corporations loaded up on cash. Selling over $1.3 trillion in investment-grade bonds and cashing in their credit lines. I talked about that last week. Listen to last week's show if you want to see why the corporations are sitting on $3 trillion of cash. That's why giving them more tax cuts isn't going to have any effect either. And by the way, in the CARES Act, there was $650 billion in tax cuts. They don't talk about that much, you know, less than 3% gets to folks with under $100,000 annual income. 83% of that $650 billion goes to the wealthiest 1%. But they're hoarding it, you see. They're sitting on it hoarding, or they're throwing it into the stock market. That's why the stock market's going up, all that free money. Okay, the CARES Act was mitigation. Put a floor under even the massive collapse we already had. Would have been worse if folks didn't get that unemployment benefits. Yeah, it would have been worse. But now the unemployment benefits are going to go away. We'll have a show next week, I'm sure, on the HEROES Act and what the actual terms are of that, and if it's a real stimulus or not. If it's the Republican bill and half of it is tax cuts, it won't be a stimulus. Well, if it's the Democrat bill, it might get us through the rest of the year. We'll see. But that's the big question mark, you see, with the economy already slowing down, or the rate of a rebound slowing down, let's say. The rate of rebound is slowing down as of mid-July, evidence coming out. If you take away that mitigation level or the stimulus of the HEROES Act on the House side, then for sure you're going to have an economic relapse following this so-called rebound. And that means we're on the road to a typical W-shaped recovery that is so typical of Great Recessions, which we're in. What's a W-shape? Well, it means you get a rebound, you get a short, brief, shallow, weak recovery, followed by a fallback and another period of short, shallow declines. And you kind of bounce along the bottom that way for years. And that's, as I said last week, I'm not going in again. That's exactly what happened in 2008-09 up until 2016. Short, shallow recoveries, stagnation, even double dips, recessions. Very clearly in Japan and in Europe, double dips, triple dips in Japan. In the U.S., if they didn't redefine GDP, which they did in 2013, it would have showed up as a double dip. Either in 2011-12 winter or 2015 winter quarters. All right, that's all in my article, why the second quarter or third quarter U.S. economic rebound will falter. That was the theme last week, and that was an article I wrote, appeared in Counterpunch and other places. That's on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Go read it. Today's show is a sequel to that. We're going to look a little bit longer term, intermediate and longer term, possible forces that are ensuring or may ensure, are and may ensure this W-shaped Great Recession recovery. And the longer you go with a W-shaped recovery, the more likely you're going to run into a financial crisis as the defaults and bankruptcies rise on the business side and consumer side and even state and local government side that cause eventually a financial crisis event like 2008. That's why businesses are loading up on cash. They see that as a possibility. It's also why the Federal Reserve has thrown trillions, not only at the banks to absorb those defaults, but even trillions at non-bank companies themselves to help them mitigate and deal with possible defaults before they even hit the banks, you see. So they got like a double cover here. The Fed is bailing out private corporations, big ones, buying up their bonds, you see, giving them cash as they raise these quick bonds, trillions of dollars in recent months. That's the gimmick, you see. drive rates down to zero so you can issue new corporate bonds that cost very little. And as soon as you issue them and get the cash, you sell them off to the government, off to the Fed. And that's exactly what's happening. They're going to sell them off to the Federal Reserve. It's going to buy trillions. That's how the Federal Reserve bails out the banking system. Buys up their bonds, their bad debt. Well, this is the newly issued debt. That's how banks are bailed out. They're not bailed out by Congress. They're bailed out by the Fed. That's why they created the Federal Reserve. That's its number one function. You know, controlling the money supply, which it doesn't do very well, that's another function. You know, regulating the banks, which it does very poorly, that's another function. Serving as a bank clearinghouse. Those are other secondary functions. I covered that all in my book a couple of years ago, Central Bankers at the End of Their Ropes, Monetary Policy in the Coming Depression. Prediction back in 2017 when I wrote that. Okay, so to cycle, recycle back to the main point here, what we're talking about is the HEROES Act next week. Will it be a real stimulus or not? If it's not, if it's weak and it's not, then that exacerbates the trajectory of the failing, faltering rebound into a W-shaped recovery, which is very likely because that's what a Great Recession is, W-shaped. But now Great Recessions also have the potential to slip into Great Depressions if they're not checked. And the longer they're not checked, the more likely that happens. You slip into a Great Depression when the banking system crashes. And that historically is exactly what happened back in 1930. As I wrote about last week in the why the third quarter rebound will falter, little historical analysis there in the middle of the article comparing 2008-09 to 1929-30 to the present. In 1929-30, after the stock market crash, it was a Great Recession. The economy was not in a Great Depression yet. But it fell into one when we started having a series of banking crashes as the defaults began impacting the banks. Banking crash in 1930, another one in 31, another one in 32, another one in 33, each one getting worse. Well, that's what drove us into a depression. And even then, it was W-shaped recovery. The New Deal in the mid-30s generated a recovery, 15-17%. GDP growth after collapsing more than that. But then a Republican Senate and a conservative Supreme Court in 1937 late said, oh, the fiscal stimulus has done its work. Let's take it away. And they started chipping away at the New Deal. And you know what happened? Right back into the Depression, 1938. Exactly what happened. Oh, they got scared, and they reinstated some of the New Deal that they had taken away, and the economy recovered in 38, 39. Well, why did they do it? Why did they start taking away after only a couple years of fiscal stimulus that proved successful? Well, because the stock market had boomed with the New Deal. You know, the stock market collapsed between 29 and 34 by 89%. So anything was positive, and the New Deal looked like, oh, consumers got some money now, and the investors went hog wild, and the stock market just boomed back up, and the conservatives, the pro-conservatives, the pro-business folks in the Senate and in the Supreme Court, you know, said, oh, recovery's here. We made money again. Good money, you know. We can dismantle the concessions. And then that's what happened. back into depression. And, you know, it wasn't until 1941, 42, when World War II began, that government spending rose to 40% of GDP. Before that, even with the New Deal, it was less than 20%. You know, 1929, it was 3%. It wasn't until you got to 40% GDP that you got a real recovery. Government spending, 40% GDP. Well, in the post-war U.S. period here, we've been around 20%, hovering. No more. 20%. It's not enough when you're in this kind of a great recession contraction. It was not enough in 2008-09. You know, Obama, his recovery package was only like 5.5%. And that's why we got insufficient fiscal stimulus and why we got a W-shaped recovery that went until 2015. 6 years of virtual no recovery. Or very, very little recovery. Oh, but the banks recovered. You see, that's because the banks don't need a fiscal stimulus. They got the Federal Reserve to force feed them all that free money. Oh, the banks recovered right away. Investors recovered within a year. And went on to, you know, super profits and super redistribution of money to their shareholders. You know, and under Obama, every year $800-900 billion in distribution of stock buybacks and dividend payouts by just the Fortune 500 companies. And then under Trump, over $1 trillion. $1.3 trillion last year and $3.4 trillion first 3 years under Trump, distributions by large corporations in stock buybacks and dividends to their shareholders. Well, no wonder we have economic inequality running amok. These guys are getting $1 trillion plus a year, and that's only the Fortune 500, you see. What about the Russell 2000, you know, or all the rest of the corporations distributing stock buybacks? It's the stock buybacks driving the stock market to, you know, record heights. The dividend payouts, the stock buybacks driving it up. And, you know, if you're in tech, who buys most of the buybacks? Senior management in tech. Most of it goes to them. They're buying it back up themselves. And by buying it up, they increase the demand for it, and they make a huge capital gain because their price is going through the roof when they buy it back. It's a scam. Okay. What I'm talking about here is, so question is there going to be a sufficient fiscal stimulus next week? Because the economy is already plateauing off after this reopening, showing signs that the reopening is running out of speed after just 3-4 weeks. By the way, the economy's been reopening since May, especially in the South, places like that. They never really shut down. And they've been reopening, you know, places like Texas, Georgia, and all, you know, they were reopening in May. They went through the motions of a shutdown for about 6 weeks. And that's why you're seeing such a surge in the virus as they're really going back to work. And with the surge in the virus, of course, it impacts the economy again. Look, the role of the virus in this crisis is that it significantly drove the economy deeper, you know, with the shutdowns in March, April. But the economy was weakening even before. This just sort of tipped it over the cliff and then drove it down. It's a causal factor. And then it contributes to the further decline, of course. But other forces now have emerged, partly as a result of the virus, but also partly independent of whatever happens to the virus. Permanent changes going on in consumption patterns and in business investment patterns and in entire industries themselves that are set in motion now And it doesn't matter. If the virus went away yesterday, these forces would continue. And we kind of want to talk about these forces today. So you got to distinguish between the virus effect and the fundamental causes of the Great Recession 2.0 that we're in now. Now, there's no doubt that the virus is continuing to have an effect. You know, as these states re-shut down, California and some of the others, it won't be a total shutdown again, if it ever was, first time around. It'll be a partial, but it won't work economically. The impact will occur, is occurring already, on the economy. Once again, a negative impact. But that's not the only force that's at play here, is my fundamental point. You got the forces associated with the virus and the shutdown and people not really going out. I mean, will people ever really jump on airplanes and run around like they used to? I don't think so. Will they really go to restaurants the way they used to, or hotels the way they used to, or even amusement parks, casinos? Big second round of layoff in Las Vegas going on, of course. And consumption patterns have changed. People are not going to do it, you know, unless it's the dumb ones. And there are a lot of dumb people in this country, you know, dumb as nails, running around saying, oh, I don't have the virus. Yeah, you may have it and you don't know it. And not really caring whether they give it to grandma and grandpa, you see. There's a big part of that population who believe it's all a conspiracy, you know, that, it's the government to get us to wear masks. And if they can get us to do that, well, they got worse things planned for us to control us, you know. That's actually what a lot of them believe. Yeah, can they believe conspiracies pushed by, you know, local politicians and local right-wing nut jobs, yeah, and their media. They believe in conspiracies instead of science. Conspiracy belief has replaced science. It's kind of the new secular religion faith. It's the new secular faith conspiracy theories. They abound. Look, you know, a lot of these people who refuse to wear masks are the same people who believe, oh, you give me a vaccine, give my kids a measles vaccine, you know, you're gonna make them, gonna give them some kind of disease by giving them a vaccine for measles, right? They're gonna become autistic. They believe that shit. Huh. These are the same people who are anti-vaccine. By the way, they're not going to take the vaccine if we ever get one. You know, who believe, oh, masks, wearing masks is a government conspiracy. And that's what we're fighting in this country. We're fighting, you know, the stupid 30%. You know, the idiocy of rural and exurbia life out there in America. Unlike any other country. You know, I mean, this is an American phenomenon that goes back centuries. Yeah, okay. Makes them very susceptible. And this, by the way, is, you know, Trump's solid 30% base. How do you deal with that? I'm not sure. Anyway, let's move on. Okay, so we got this problem here of the stimulus. And if it fails, I'm going to guarantee W-shaped recovery and a relapse. But that's not the only factor. As I said, you know, what lies ahead, the theme today is about more intermediate and longer term forces at play here that will exacerbate the current crisis. Okay. What are the other factors? Well, what we got is a second wave of job losses coming, not just because people are going back to work because of the intensification of the second wave of the virus. You see, that's happening. So it's kind of virus-driven re-unemployment going on that's going to increase. But there's a permanent layoff wave coming behind that. That's a reflection of business, fundamental change in business behavior, investment behavior, production behavior, and businesses realizing that something basic has changed and they're restructuring, you see. Do you really think we're going to have all the airlines that we have? No, a lot of them are going to go under. Same with hotels, going to go under. Same with small businesses. A lot of them are already gone. There was a study just came out of Harvard University that during the shutdown, already 110,000 small restaurants and retail, you know, leisure hospitality industry have closed permanently, 110,000 of them. And that was only in by May, the end of May. How many have closed now permanently? Not ever reopening, you see. We're going to have another round of permanent closures now. And if you look at the June job numbers, government says 4.8 million jobs created. Well, those are people returning, you see, as they opened up the economy. But 3 million of 4.8 were in leisure and hospitality, restaurant, hotels, and so forth. Those are the ones that are reclosing. So the second wave of unemployment coming, just as they cut unemployment benefits, is really a second wave partly driven by the virus, but also a second wave of more permanent job losses or disappearance of jobs by large companies who realize something is household consumption patterns have fundamentally changed in certain industries. Those companies in those industries are restructuring and contracting and laying off permanently. Well, look, the airlines just last week announced what? American Airlines, 25 or 36,000. United, either 25. I forget which one. I think American was 25,000 permanent layoffs coming in September, and United, 36,000. And all the other airlines are going to be announcing that, too. The smaller airlines are going to consolidate, have to go under. Right. Default. They're going to default on their debt, and then they're going to go bankrupt and be consolidated. Going to go into Chapter 13 and consolidate. But it's not just the airlines, you know. The car rental companies, Hertz already. Airports, all those companies supporting airports, local companies. Boeing has announced 16,000 layoffs. Uber, another cut, second cut of 3,000. You got big box retail companies like Penny's, Neiman Marcus, Lord & Taylor. They're going bankrupt already. Malls everywhere are going to shut down. Even the big ones, you know, the Mall of America in Minnesota, and then the big one in New Jersey, wherever. Strip malls, you know, where all the beauty salons are. And barber shops and so forth, going under. Oil and gas companies, fracking companies, 200 of them are already in default. 200, including big ones like Chesapeake. Laying off tens of thousands of workers. You know, and prior to this crash, that was one of the real growth areas of employment. Fracking, Texas and Dakotas and Pennsylvania and places like that. Right now, big layoffs. Trucking companies, small trucking companies in particular, retail companies like Brooks Brothers, independent restaurant and hotel chains like Crystal and Kraftwerks, you know, they're all permanent layoffs by the thousands and tens of thousands. You know, yesterday, the unemployment claims, initial unemployment claims data comes out every Thursday. What did it show? Well, 1.3 million, according to the state unemployment benefits system, 1.3 million. which is the same as the previous week at 1.31 million. And the previous weeks, we've got 17 consecutive weeks of over a million people filing initial unemployment benefits. 17 consecutive weeks. And by the way, the 1.3 million, which is the lowest, but still over a million, is really only part, because that number that they report, 1.3 million, is just those getting benefits under the state unemployment system. There's a federal supplemental unemployment benefits system called PUC, passed under the CARES Act, giving benefits finally for gig workers and contract workers. That's another 968,000 last week initial filing. So we're really talking about two and a half million people on layoffs, I mean on unemployment benefits here every week still. And now the economy is weakening again. 2 million. Yeah. That compares to 2008-09 during the first Great Recession. The largest number was about 650,000 a month filing for benefits. Now we've got 2.3 every month, million, three, four times as many every week. Think about that. And they're going to cut their benefits? Amazing. Well, you know, it really means that a lot of those Republicans in Senate, McConnell and so forth, they don't give a damn about anybody except their business constituents that pay for their reelections. That's all they care for. They're looking for excuses to pull the plug. Just as they did in 1937-38, you see. Again, you know, you look at some of these governors, Republican governors, you know, DeSantis of Florida and this guy Kemp in Georgia, they don't give a shit about how many people die. Yeah, they're preventing cities like in Atlanta from wearing masks. The city gets an order, wear a mask, you know, that'll help at least some. And they said, no, you can't do that. You know, they're all focused on that 30% dumb as nails group. Right-wing radicals that they think are going to keep them in office. The Trump strategy, right? Keep riling up that 30% because that's your base and that's your only hope. Turn them out. They'll come out to vote. You know, agitate them. Scare the hell out of them. They'll come out to vote. And you depress the vote of your opponents with voter suppression and other, you know, gerrymandering and other ways. Depress your opponent's vote turnout and agitate your base to get your turnout. And if you can do that in the 8 swing states, you'll get reelected. You know, all these national polls don't mean a damn thing. All that matters is those 8 states. Because a country is fundamentally divided and has been for 2 decades or more into red and blue. And the blue states are solid blue and the red are solid red. And you got these 8 swing states. And that's all that matters, because you got this anti-democratic, archaic, incredible electoral college system, which is the great check on the people, you see. The great check. To keep them from really having a democracy. Okay, so, all right. First problem, we may not get a significant stimulus. Second problem, we've got this second wave of layoffs, many of which are permanent layoffs. And by the way, if they don't come out with the money to bail out the states and the cities, you're going to see an additional wave of public public worker layoffs coming very soon. I've seen estimates that they're going to need, the states and cities are going to need about $960 billion in bailout because they got no revenue coming in and they got all these additional expenses. You know, the House Heroes Bill has proposed $1 trillion to bail out the states, which is about what's needed. But McConnell doesn't want to bail out the states, you see, because most of them that need the most bailing are the most urbanized states, and those happen to be blue states, you know? So, you know, Kentucky and Tennessee and Arkansas don't need as much of a bailout because they don't pay the safety net and the services the other states pay, and their public workers get a pittance in terms of pensions. So it's the bigger states, you know, Illinois and some of the others that really need the bailout. But Mitch McConnell says, no, I don't want to bail these guys out. You know, let them suffer. Let them go to the municipal bond market and go deeper in debt and borrow. You know, that's McConnell and the Republicans' attitude. But we're going to have another big additional add-on wave very soon of public workers if they don't pass. And it'll happen right after this bill. If there's not a significant bailout here, and the Republican proposal there isn't, it's only a word of mouth, is it's only $1 trillion. So it couldn't be very much for state and local governments, because most of it would be tax cuts or more money to bail out PPP money to bail out small business. Okay, so that's the second crisis, the second problem, that the permanent layoffs are going to deepen throughout a number of industries. And it's going to hit service workers the most, as it already has, which means lower paid, which means minority workers. They're going to suffer the most. Permanent layoff wave. Well, if we do have a permanent second wave, then that means for sure W-shaped recovery. Now, there's other factors here as well. You know, I said eight. Well, I haven't finished here. Let me keep going. We're about to see a wave of rent evictions. You know, there's a moratorium under the CARES Act on evictions. Not all states followed it, but a lot of them did. But that runs out here this month. There are 110 million renters in this country. And from what I've seen, they're forecasting 23 million rent evictions in the coming months. 23 million people. Even if, you know, half are thrown out of their rents. Well, they will be. If you, suspend a moratorium and you take away unemployment benefits that are allowing people to at least pay their rent and buy food and keep the utilities on, that's the $600 additional. And people are spending that, by the way. You know, the consumption, they've found, studies have found, that those people who are getting the $600 extra are spending it. Their spending, their consumption has gone up, actually. But if you take that away, that increase in consumption is going to collapse. They won't be able to pay their rents, and they will be among the 23 million evicted. Chaos. You think people are going to put up with that? I don't think so. Now, on top of that, you've got this childcare education crisis. Everyone's talking about, going back to work. What are we going to do? How are these kids going to remote from school, have remote school? You know, distance learning, internet learning. Now, you can pull that off maybe for high schoolers, maybe for junior high. But kids K through six, they can't learn from home. They need in-class instruction. But you know, if you open up the schools and just send everyone back like nothing happened, you're going to have a even further wave. You know, a lot of teachers, there's like 2 million, 1.3 million or something, teachers are over 55, and they're more susceptible. And don't tell me, I don't believe for a minute, that asymptomatic kids can't give the virus to older people. And, you know, I'm not fully convinced that kids can't get it or don't get it either. I don't believe much of what they've been saying about the virus because they don't know very much about this virus. This isn't a flu virus. This is a blood virus. And they don't know much about the conditions that even when you, quote, recover, affect you for how long, maybe for the rest of your life, and make you susceptible to what else? This is a bad bug. But, you know, arguing from the other perspective, what can they do? I mean, you got millions and millions of two-paycheck parent families with young kids, millions and millions. How are they going to? And they can't afford childcare. Even if millions of more people needing childcare can find it. So learning from home is very difficult for families with young children, and everyone is working. What did they do? Chaos. It's going to be chaos. And boy, people are going to get pissed off. Another way of getting evictions and child care crisis and so forth, right? They're going to have to revolutionize the child care system. And a lot of government spending going to have to go into it. Just it's going to be, you know, on a par with unemployment benefits and Social Security. There's no choice. They got to do this with child care. And then there's higher education. Higher education's in deep doo-doo. Yeah, higher education's in deep doo-doo. A lot of consolidations of smaller liberal arts colleges, they won't be able to survive. You know, you're going to have students, well, I've already seen estimates that you're going to, freshman class entrance going to decline 15 to 20% this year. Why? Because a lot of them are just going to take a gap year, you see. You're just going to take off for a year. Hopefully this thing will clear up. Well, that means lost revenue for the colleges. At the same time, transfer students, they're projecting 5 to 10% fewer transfer students and 5 to 10% continuing students. Well, you know, the colleges are going to introduce and, you know, distance learning on a massive scale that already are. Some Ivy League colleges, that's all they're going to do. You know, they'll have, like, Harvard allow some on-campus classes where you got to have labs and things like that. But it'll be distance learning. But you know what? Are students going to pay full boat for distance learning? I don't think so. You know, you're going to pay $60,000 to go to an Ivy League or Stanford or something like that, a year tuition, when you're going to be sitting at home and doing it all online? I don't think so. You're going to see a wave of legal suits following this fall where students and their families are going to try to claw back some of this money. Oh, well, that means even less revenues. Now, the big private colleges are going to be all right. They got endowments, although the endowments are going to slip, you know. But it's the smaller schools without big endowments and the public colleges and universities who rely on the government, you know, who's going to cut education subsidies, that are going to be in trouble. Sharply reduced college revenues are going to be the problem. And we're going to see a total reworking of the business. I mean, the business model for higher education, total reworking, going to go on rapidly. Global recession. Over 90% of the countries are in recession, along with the United States this time around, and they're synchronized. It's the whole global economy. In 2008-09, it was only 60%, 90% now. That means a lot of countries are going to have what's called sovereign debt defaults. You know, the emerging market countries have borrowed a lot of money from Western banks, the IMF, the World Bank, and other sources. And now with the collapse of the global economy, they can't raise revenue from their exports with which to service their sovereign debts, which are mostly Western banks and investors, hedge funds, and so forth. They won't be able to pay for it. That's what a default is. You're unable to service, in other words, pay the principal and interest. That's what we mean when we say service the debt. When you can't service the debt, you default. When you default, then the banks and investors who own your debt have a decision to make. Do they let you go for a while? Do they ease up on the terms and conditions? Do they suspend your payments for a month or two? Or do they say, okay, you're in default. We're going to put you in bankruptcy and take what assets you got, sell them off, and get some of our money back. Well, we're going to see a wave of sovereign debt defaults for sure. Now, that's what the IMF is there for, you know, to provide some money to pay the interest and principal on the debt, and then the IMF says to these countries, well, then you got to squeeze your own people more to raise more tax money in order to ensure you're going to be able to pay off this new loan that we're going to give you, that actually we're not going to give you the loan. We're going to give it to the banks you owe money to. You know, these countries never see this money, but then they got to squeeze austerity. They got to squeeze their people in order to pay the IMF and the new loans, the new debt they took out to pay the old debt. And, you know, that's a form of financial indentureship that just goes on forever and ever. Yeah. But the IMF doesn't have enough money to provide bailout for all these sovereign countries now. There's so many of them going under at the same time. Going under meaning not being able to service their debt. Well, where does the IMF get its money? Well, it gets its money from the United States and the other major countries who contribute to a fund. Well, they're not going to contribute because they're in trouble now, too. So that's certainly going to exacerbate, especially the recovery, especially in those countries that rely more on exports. Like Germany, over half of its GDP, I believe, is based upon exports production. The U.S., you know, we're in the teens, not insignificant, but not as dependent. Okay, so sovereign debt defaults could and will very much make it worse. By the way, the Federal Reserve is trying to bail out those countries, too. It gives dollars to the central banks of those countries. It swaps, dollar swaps. So we're bailing out not only U.S. banks, the Fed, right? Not only non-banks, the Fed's bailing them out in the U.S. It's bailing out foreign central banks. All right, so global recession, sovereign debt default, another big factor here. Another one, permanent industry transformations. What do companies do in these crises? Well, they figure out ways to reduce costs, which is usually how to run with fewer workers. And they're doing that now. They're figuring out, okay, you know, so many people can work from home, so many people we don't really need, so many people are going to cut their wages and benefits. How can we reduce our distribution costs, et cetera, et cetera? And they figure out, oh, gee, you know, we can run this way now. I'm talking about big companies with a lot of resources. And they do. Permanently. They come out of permanent. They'll be using more part-time temp contract gig work, if they can, than ever before. Every time we have a deep recession, we have an increase in the temps and the part-time contingent work, as we call it. precarious jobs. But even a lot of those precarious jobs are going to disappear with artificial intelligence, because what artificial intelligence is all about is getting rid of simple decision-making jobs, simple decision-making, in services as well. That wave is accelerating now, permanently. They're not going to call back a lot of these workers. Yeah. Another problem among the eight here is a return to fiscal austerity. And I was cutting government spending programs on social programs, safety net in particular. You know, in the U.S., they never cut defense. They talk about it, but never cut defense. Well, that's what happened after the prior Great Recession in 2008-09. You know, Obama puts in $787 billion, which wasn't enough, only 5.5% government spending. Half of that was tax cuts that got hoarded. Another large tranche got hoarded by state and local governments. They're supposed to hire people they didn't. You know, that's why it took so long. That's why they had to add, you know, supplemental programs like cash for clunkers, your old cars, or first-time home buyers. But that was just the, you know, 10, 15 billion. Didn't add much. So, you know, maybe a 6% stimulus out of the whole thing. So, didn't do much. But, you know, that, what, $800-900 billion stimulus in 2009 was taken away, and then some, in August 2011 with an austerity bill. $1.5 trillion were taken out in 2011-12. That's why we had a second dip recession, which didn't show up because they baked the numbers, changed the definitions, in 2012-13. Yeah. That's austerity, you see, when you take back what you gave. You give with one hand, you take back with the other. And that's what they do, prematurely. And that's why you, another reason why you keep getting this bouncing along the bottom W-shaped recovery. Well, I predict that's coming again. If not into 2021, 2022. Yeah, they'll engage in fiscal austerity once again. Why? Because they've already boosted the government debt from $22 trillion to $29 or $30 trillion already. $30 trillion debt. Well, they got to pay that debt. The government has to pay that debt. You know, that money is borrowed from private investors, or they take it out of Social Security surplus or government employee pensions surplus. Yeah, they take it out of there too. You know, or China or Japan or Saudi Arabia buys government bonds, and they got to pay the interest on that bond. Well, it's just gone up $6 trillion. $30 trillion government debt. Federal government. I'm not talking about state and local government. You know, that was like $4 or $5 trillion. That's probably going up another couple trillion. And I'm not talking about the Federal Reserve debt, which was roughly $4.5 trillion on its balance sheet, which is at least $3 trillion more now, $7-8 trillion. You see, debt is their solution because they don't want to raise taxes on the rich. They gave them $15 trillion since George W. Bush. The 1%, they don't want to raise taxes to make those people pay for the debt. No, no, they'll either borrow it or they'll squeeze it out of the safety net. I saw a study, I think it was by, maybe it was the World Bank or IMF, I forget which. But they said just recently last week that said governments to deal with this crisis are either going to have to cut social spending by 25%. Or raise taxes by 50%, or borrow $2.5 trillion a year for the next 10 years in order to finance this deficit. Well, which one do you think they're going to do? You think a government that politicians are elected by the money of the rich and the corporations are going to turn around and take the taxes from these people, raise taxes on them? Not likely. They're going to, some combination of selling bonds, raising the debt, government debt, selling more bonds, and or cutting the safety net. So they cut the safety net. Watch out. Well, because the only big bucks they can cut now is education, already in crisis, you see, or transportation, already falling apart in this country, or Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid. Well, they're going to go after the latter big time. That's what austerity is about. And that's another factor. If they do that, will ensure, maybe ensure tripping the short, shallow, bouncing along the bottom W-shaped recovery we're in, tripping it into a bona fide depression at that point. You see, the austerity, renewed austerity could do it. Other factors could do it. We could have all these defaults, corporate, non-bank corporate defaults, household defaults. You know, people aren't going to be able to pay their mortgages and so forth if they're laid off. So you'll have housing defaults. You got massive commercial property defaults going on right now. I'm talking about the malls and the office buildings coming next, resorts, right? Apartment complexes, as people don't pay their rent. That's commercial property. That's even in a worse shape than residential property right now. That could exacerbate. And then, of course, it's not just a financial crisis and problems as defaults and bankruptcies grow, either through the natural problems we've got with employment and second waves or lack of fiscal stimulus, right? Or fiscal austerity coming, all that could trip the economy into a bona fide depression. But on top, layered on top of all this, you know, we've got this incredible political instability in this country going on, both at the level of formal institutions and at the grassroots level. I have no doubt that Trump is going to try to push his people into the streets. Yeah, before the election, to try to save himself. More and more desperate, more and more radical, more and more agitational, whipping up, you know, his 30% dumb as nails followers. More conspiracy. They're taking away your guns, right? Oh, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. Oh, you know, they're tearing down all your statues, right? Massive political instability will have serious negative consequences for expectations, both for investment by businesses and consumption by households. And all of that will exacerbate the problem even further. So we have these eight forces. Read the article on my blog, jackrasmus.com, what lies ahead, for more detail on all of this. Okay? And next week, I'm sure we'll have some interesting news on the HEROES Act, whether we're going to have stimulus or not.